maybe he just can't remember what happened to
Dickie. Well, I can't remember either. But Jimmy would have been much more aware of that. Because Gordon was somebody, I was always happy to see him, but I never associated with Gordon. Now, Beau was civil to him. I mean, Beau really admired Gordon because he stuck out for what he believed is right, but at the same time, he thought it was all wrong, you know. But he did, he admired him.
Gordon Moss is such an anomaly in this town at that time. And
Dr. Simonini, who, you know, had been very much on the same side as Gordon, never said anything else. But Gordon did.
After the meeting in Germany?
Yeah.
Early on?
Yeah. Because, you know, these people were ostracized and... Who knows what kind of hateful things were said to them. Because I know some of the people that live in this area, and they will do mean and horrible things.
What about Thinker Barbara Griffin?
Like a fatal enemy.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking, you know, that he could admire Gordon Moss for standing up for his principles, though he disagreed with the principles. That's what prompted the question. Interesting.
I think I don't think he had the same attitude toward Reverend Griffin as he had toward Gordon Moss. I think that the white people in those days living in this area had a very difficult time walking at all in the shoes of a black person.
Well, what I was wondering is, did he really know Reverend Griffin? Did he have any conversations, contacts, any way of knowing him?
I'm sure not.
As a peer, as opposed to just a...
A figurehead sort of thing. No, and certainly he would never make any effort to get to know anybody like that. He never made any effort to go speak to Gordon. He isolated Gordon.
It occurs to me that might explain, you know, the aspect of working for the welfare department that seemed strange, because in working for the welfare department, he was working with blacks in their...
But in Rockbridge County, it was probably not too many black people. And see, Beau had always said...
But the ones that would have been getting welfare would have been on, what he would have expected probably, as opposed to having peers who were black.
He always maintained that he had been raised with black people and that he really liked black people. And his major playmates, and I've heard this before from other people that grew up in the South, that his major playmates were black children, black boys, a couple of years older than he was, and that this was encouraged by the family. But then, when they got to be 12, 13, or 14, that was the end of it. And they never hardly spoke to them even again, you know. So he said that he knew and understood black people, and he liked them, had nothing against them. But it was wrong for the states to tell them that they had to go to school together. But also at the same time, it started out as states' rights stuff, but then the corruption came in to back up the argument about why whites should not go to blacks with schools. And there was this professor, does anybody remember his name? He was quite an elderly man at the University of Virginia who published a book on the difference in intelligence between blacks and whites. And it became a Bible sort of thing, you know, a reference. there's this University of Virginia professor.
It was used in the case, yeah. I mean, it was. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, our house began to be filled with literature like this and stayed here until Beau died. And a few days after he died, I threw it all out. I didn't want it in my house, which is probably a bad mistake because I could have...
historical value.
Significance now, but at the time, I've got to get rid of this, you know.
What part did Beau play in the court cases?
Oh, he was... he would attend all of them, certainly, and he would. I'm sure that he helped get a lot of the information. He was very much in contact with the people that were doing the cases.
He was a salaried employee. I mean, was he retained by the defenders or by the foundation?
No, not the. By the foundation, yes. He was very involved with the foundation. So I'm sure that he was retained by the foundation.
For the academy,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's...
But he was not employed. He was self-employed otherwise. He was had a small retainer from the Farmville Herald so that Mr. Wall could ask him legal questions about the business. And then he was the lawyer for the foundation. But it was, you know, I have every recollection that he was extremely instrumental in the ins and outs of how everything was handled. Now, I'm sure that, you know, that he had a lot of input into what went on.
But he was not either officially a lawyer or a defendant or any of those roles in these court cases?
As far as I know, no, he never was.
Did he testify as a witness?
He may have. He may have testified as a lawyer he may have been used for his legal interpretation of different things.
I mean, he is quoted as saying, and I'm not quoting correctly, but the effect of, well, we'll just use the same strategy that the NAACP is using. We will make the courts prove that Prince Edward County has to have a public school system.
Sure. I believe that.
That's a pretty fundamental approach to legal questions. That's a huge concept.
Well, it really is a huge concept, but...
Was he proud of the Academy?
Yes, he was very proud of the Academy.
Did he ever have an opinion about what the black students in Prince Edward County should have?
You can really... armor yourself against anything like that, particularly if you're dealing with high legal principles and high political principles. His feeling was, well, the black people they made the choice, you know, after their schools were closed and everything, the white people offered them black private schools, and they turned that down. And I feel that Beau really felt that they were their own worst enemies, you know, that they had brought all of this really upon themselves, that they hadn't played the game properly. And he didn't play the game properly. But he did, I don't mean that. He played the game properly because he stuck and tried to get the law to be on his side and everything. Do you see what I mean? That he stuck by legal principles and he worked himself hard to make sure that the courts understood what these principles were, and he really fought for them.
How do you account for the fact that Prince Edward County didn't really have violence to the degree that it happened?
Because, that's a very good question, as one before you came that I have been thinking about, and that is that Beau had said that he would never allow, and he himself would never participate in any violence, that this was absolutely the wrong way to go about maintaining segregation and states' rights. I'm sure that his father felt the same way, and I'm sure that many of the leaders, I'm sure that this was the philosophy that was imposed on the people in this county, first on the leaders by Beau and his father, and then the word spread, and it was just amazing how the whole the white people of the county worked together as a unified unit, you know, and there was never any violence, and that was the reason why, because Mr. Wall and Beau would never countenance anything like that.
Were you friendly with, or was Beau friendly with, people like perceived, not liberals, but moderates like Maurice Large or Les Andrews or Willie Putney?
Maurice Large and Les Andrews kept a very low profile. Waverly did not. And Beau had grown up Beau had grown up with Waverly, and in a way liked Waverly, but in a way he didn't like him at all, because Waverly was very outspoken about, well, he never was outspoken enough, I don't think, you know, to start a whole counter group to the segregationists, but Waverly, in his conversation and stuff like that, questioned what people like Beau were doing, and so Beau didn't like Waverly, and he wouldn't associate with him. He wouldn't have anything to do with him, and he said, "I don't trust him," you know, stuff like that.
Waverly was questioning what the foundation was doing.
I think, you know, but I don't think that he got up there and made public speeches or anything. I think this was all in like the coffee clash or
but,
something
but
like that.
But he simply was not being just going along.
No, he was not easy to get along with, because he would question.
Well, he wasn't easy to get along with anyway. So yeah. Interesting. But Large and Andrews.
I was never aware that they were particularly moderate.
Bush League attempts were just shut up.
Are you aware of that group called the Bush League?
No.
Is this a new idea?
This is new. Who were they? Morris and Les? And
yeah.
This was when?
Early. Early, because you know, small town life, there were repercussions that Les Andrews is the only one, you know, I know specifically about, but, you know, his kids were getting snubbed, and his wife played bridge, and her friends were, you know, canceling bridge dates and things like that. All because they were meeting at, you know, I can't remember if it's Les Andrews' cabin or Maurice Large's cabin.
I think the Putneys had that same experience. One of the things seemed interesting to me is that the people who were in Beau's group were very organized, working together, supporting each other, and on the other side of the issue, the Bush Leaguers were not as cohesive with each other or supportive of each other. They were acting somewhat individually, so they didn't have the same kind of emotional support.
Calvin Bass, Gordon Moss. I don't think that, you know, anybody was ever, you know, kept roll or something like that, but there was an attempt because it was obvious, you know, that the foundation was so determined that there would be a private school in place, that they would close the public schools, that those who were alarmed at the idea of losing public education, whether it was segregated or integrated, is not really the issue, but of losing
public education,
we're trying to meet together to come up with a counter strategy. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, it got called the Bush League, and it was,
it foundered,
partly because, you know, of the kinds of social pressures being placed on families. And
I think concerns about their children. I heard this theme sort of discussed, that concerns that their children would pay a social price.
Exactly.
Because of their...
I can believe all of that. I can really believe all of that. I just couldn't stand the type of people that were involved in segregation.
It was taken, I mean, as you know, your husband, obviously a very intelligent man. I mean, if he could wrap himself in the moral armor of principle, so could everybody else, you know? I mean, and then you don't have to deal with whatever is underneath that,
right,
those principles. But, you know, couching it in terms of states' rights and tradition.
And, right.
You know, I mean, that's...
And the fact that he was not in favor of violence at any cost.
Sure.
Gave him high moral ground.
A high moral ground, exactly. He's not part of the rabble.
It was very, very, very difficult to contend with. I had a very difficult life. I was very isolated, you know.
That is a theme that I'm hearing from the people that I'm interviewing, is that they felt isolated.
As you know, and yet I could never do anything behind his back. That's just the way that it was. I couldn't go to Waverly, for instance, whom I knew, you know, had a different viewpoint and everything, because that would have been traitorous.
Yeah, disloyal
to my disloyal to my husband, and I just couldn't do that. So,
what do you think is, as you look back on this, if we're to that point? And thinking about this, what do you see as the important impact, the most important impact, or some of the most important influences on this county that these events had? And it's been a long time since all of these things took place.
One of the things is that anybody by the name of Wall, and I don't blame the African Americans for their attitude toward me, but I have felt that people were very suspicious of me because of my name being Wall, and they don't know anything of my background, you know.
I assure you, it was not only African Americans, it was people like me. I mean, as far as I was concerned, you were one of them when I came to Prince Edward County.
Okay. Well, okay. That's one of a major effect upon me. I personally feel that the legacy of all of that is very, very slow to die. I still don't trust a whole lot of people in Prince Edward County, because I feel that there is a buried feeling still of that attitude toward black people still in the county. And I think that with each new generation, it softened a bit. But I still think that there is a residue of prejudice here among a number of the people in the county. It's going to take a number more generations to completely eliminate. That's what I think is the major effect of all of this.
What would you want future generations to know about this? What is the most important thing you would hope they would understand about this? Your grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
It's very hard to divorce myself from the emotional content of all of this.
Don't try.
No. So I would want my grandchildren to know, I want my children to know. And see, for a long time I didn't say anything very much about Bo to them because I wanted to maintain to them their admiration for their father, you know. I just told Angus when he and Linda were here in April about the prenuptial agreement. I think he was just totally floored, but I feel bad about doing that because I think he's got to have a realistic attitude about his father, that he was human, he had weaknesses and great strengths, but I think it was, I'm not sure that Angus really wants to know that much about him, but I think it's really important. Not all of my children know that, Susan. We hardly ever get together as a group, and then we don't have a sort of family meeting or anything like that. So this is something that goes on more one-on-one. So some of them know some things, and some of them know other things.
As far as
everybody is concerned that we can never let something like this happen again, and yet it's so insidious and so invidious. How do you protect against something like this, you know? How do you protect against a group of very bright...
We're stepping out of your family at this point and looking at a broader perspective on it.
I don't think we'd ever have anything overt about race again, but there may be something, would come up about something else. About religion, for instance. You know, I can easily see people ostracizing people because of their religions, for instance, and the controversy about prayers in schools could easily. In a small town like this.
The immigrant question, and you as an immigrant.
Yeah, but you take a small community like this and you have a few very determined, bright people that are absolutely sure about what they're doing. They sort of win over all the wishy-washy, the vast majority of people who are wishy-washy, and there's this air, you know, that you're scared to say anything because of the repercussions against your children, for instance, or something like that. So I think we have to be, I don't know, this is taking a very dark look, isn't it, at society. Maybe most people say that'll never happen again, but I say it really could happen again, maybe about some, not school, not segregation, but about other things.
Well, but then if you look at the here and now compared to the way it was then, with thinking about public education, thinking about relationships, acquaintances, friendships with people from different races, ethnic backgrounds, how do you see change, and how do you evaluate the changes that have happened?
Well, I think that there's been a lot of very positive change. I think the public school and the number of people that send their kids there and everything like that has been a very positive thing that has happened. I just feel when you look at the way people, white people, do not support the Moton Project, for instance.
Jackie, I would like to make a suggestion.